certain sense, it actually rose before that. Archaeology was essentially the servant of museum science and then of art history. Archaeologists went out and looked for beautiful things to put them on display. That's fundamentally what they did. The great, one might sort of put tongue in cheek and say that the great goal of early archaeology was to find the Venus de Milo's arms. You see, this would have made you famous. And you found these wonderful things and you put them in museums and you arrayed them room by room and so on. Now, there's no archaeologist in the world today who wouldn't love to find a beautiful thing. But archaeology today is based on and is dedicated to something very different. Modern survey archaeology is designed basically to take large sites and slowly but surely to strip the soil away layer by layer by layer to uncover life as it was lived, to find humble things, ordinary dwellings, to find humble things like ordinary crockery, ordinary ceramics, to go digging through garbage pits to find what percentages of chicken bones and what percentages of pig bones and what percentages of beef bones you find in the garbage pits in order to make guesses about diets, in order to make guesses about what people ate, in order to make guesses about their protein intake and this kind of thing. In other words, today, archaeology is really much more interested in figuring out how people lived than in go finding the beautiful things that they left lying about. What that means is that day by day by day, the Greek Dark Ages are actually less dark to us than they were once before, even though we don't have these great spectacular palaces and, as near as we can tell, beautiful things to find and to look at and to admire. Now, between about 800 and about 700 B.C., the Greek world began to show the first clear signs of life and energy. Kind of a revival begins to appear all over much of the Greek world. Historians refer to this as the transitional period between the Dark Ages, less dark all the time, as I've said, and the Archaic period. The great classical period, to which we'll turn in a series of lectures, beginning with the next one, follows this Archaic period. Now, the great achievements of this transitional period of the early part of the Archaic period, the great achievements of this period, the fundamental achievement, is the creation of the polis, the Greek city-state, the fundamental Greek political institution, a political institution that gave vocabulary, that gave ideals to the Western world ever since. In our next couple of lectures, we're going to look at some detail at Athens and at Sparta, two of the greatest of the Greek polis. All right? For now, I just want to emphasize that we can begin to see the first faint stirrings, like a small sprout coming through the ground in early spring, of what will later be the full-flowered polis. Now, Dark Age Greece appears on the whole to have been a pretty peaceful place, a fairly easy place. Now, I said earlier in the last lecture that Greece was never an easy land to eke a living out of, and that's certainly true. But it's also true that in a world that was depopulated, in a world with much less contention than had marked the Mycenaean period, people were able to live their lives largely undisturbed by external forces. And as a result, the population began to grow. Now, one of the great problems in the Greek world is that the mountain crags, the mountain ridges, tend to work in such a way as to leave a kind of a patchwork quilt of small areas of arable land. And as a result of this, the population can pretty easily and pretty quickly outstrip the capacity of that arable land to support it. Now you've got a problem. You got more people than you can feed. What are you going to do? This began to generate a whole series of important and complex social tensions in the Greek world. And it's probably this gradual pressure of population on resources that leads to some of the steps that begin to generate the polis, as I suggested a few minutes ago. Now, by around 900, 800 BC, the commercial exploits of the Phoenicians may very well have been, in the first place, a spur to the Greeks. Wealth generated by trade might either supplement or upset the very delicate balance of life in essentially agricultural communities. The Greeks knew that the Phoenicians were trading. There were some Greeks who were already beginning to engage in trade. There's no place in the Greek world that's more than about 150 miles from the sea. It's much easier to get to the sea and travel around by sea than it is to travel overland in Greece. If any of you have ever driven in Greece, if any of you have ever tried to take a train in Greece, you know this to be the case. It's not an easy land to move about in. By around 750 BC, or thereabouts, various Greek cities began to display one or another of three responses to these tensions generated in this period, occasioned by rising population and limited resources. The first response, particularly associated with Sparta, you conquer your neighbors. You don't have enough soil, you don't have enough land, you conquer your neighbors. The Spartans conquered the Messenians, the people who lived to the west of them in the Peloponnesus, and reduced them to slavery, turned them into helots, state slaves. We'll talk more about them in the next lecture when we turn to Sparta. Another way to do it, we might say,